Okay, thank you very much. So thank you for the organizers to have me give this presentation. So you already introduced me. So I'm Denis Ip, I work at Onera, and I give here a talk on flow reconstruction using data simulation and resolvent analysis. Actually, data simulation is about uncertainties, and uncertainties can come from experiments and also from CFD, actually. So in experiments, here I've just put some slides together of what we do a little at Onera in terms of experiments. So we have wind tunnels, we have models, we have measurement techniques, and various measurement techniques that are force balances, field measurements, and so on. And of course, when you do experiments, there are lots of uncertainties. And here I just list a number of them. Of course, for each measurement, you have a measurement uncertainty, but you also have boundary conditions, issues in experiments. So how is the upstream flow in the wind tunnel? What is the surface quality of the model? That can be also deformation, vibrations. So there can be errors in positions. So these are all uncertainties that exist when you do experiments and measurements. On the other side, when you do CFD, computational fluid dynamics, you always have a model, actually, except if you have, if you are on the DNS side, which is on the top. But the more you, but of course, DNS is very expensive. So you can more or less model a big or small part of the dynamics. So on the other side, what I put here is runs. So here you have just a steady flow field and you have modeled a lot. So the two extreme parts you see on the upper left, this is more something like LES DNS where you solve everything. And on the lower part, you have runs modeling where you, runs computation where you model a lot of stuff. And depending on this, on the fidelity of these computations, you have here other uncertainties. So the first of which is modeling. So depending if you have runs or LES, there are more or less errors, but you also have, of course, errors in boundary conditions, errors in discretization, because you can have a mesh which is not fine enough. And you can also have numerical resolution problems, like you don't at each time step solve the equations how you should do. So data simulation is both, is finally combining these two worlds and try to tune uncertainties and try to make them match. So that's the starting point of data simulation. So uncertainties in both experiments and CFD. And data simulations can be, in some sense, defined as, let's say, tune uncertain parameters in a model, that's in a CFD, here it's CFD model, in order to match given experiments. So you see here, there is the CFD part, and the given measurements, of course, are in the experiments. And this matching, of course, is within measurement uncertainty. So it's always about uncertainties. So basically, to deal with data simulations, there are two main techniques in the literature and in the field, in the community. There are ensemble methods where basically you try to tune the uncertainties by representing the uncertainties by ensembles. This is basically what I have represented here from a sketch by Da Silva, where you have this is a position, X1 and X2 is a position that you try to estimate where there is uncertainty. And this is the initial location that you estimate. And this is an ensemble. You have, let's say, 100 points inside here. And then you have a model which will propagate these uncertainties, this ensemble, into a prediction. And finally, you will take your measurements and make the intersection between the prediction, which is the modeling part, the CFD part, and then measurement, which is the experimental part. And finally, you have what is the update. You have something which is in between the experiment and between the CFD. So this is when you look at ensemble methods. My talk, because my background is more from optimization, will more deal with variational models. So this is called usually 3D VAR, 4D VAR. And basically, you do exactly the same thing. So you have still X1, X2, which are uncertain positions. But this time you try to minimize a cost functional where you have the two parts. First, there is the measurement uncertainty. You have M, which is the measurement from the model, M bar, which is the measurement from the experiment. And then you have a covariance matrix, which is linked to the measurement, which is the error measure. And then you have also a state covariance, which considers the modeling uncertainty. And this is given here by Cx. And basically, by minimizing this cost functional, you have an X min, which will be the same as the update, which was here, but done in a different way. So here we have two techniques to do that. And I will focus on variational methods because I always did that and I never did ensemble methods. So I focus on the second part. So in terms just of history, data simulation came from meteorology some years ago, and it was introduced more in aerodynamics and in measurements in particular since 2010, something like this, because for example, PIV measurements today, to improve some measurements, people combine assimilation and measurements to improve their measurement techniques. But in the case of aerodynamics, it was more Kato, and then other people came more into the aerodynamics, like Mons, Vincent Mons, also Sean Simon, where I collaborated with. But now there are much more people. So that's just from historical side. So now when we want to make data simulation, basically you can reconstruct two kinds of things. First of all, this is an LES simulation where you have small fluctuations, unsteady fluctuations. And the first thing you can do is try to reconstruct unsteady fluctuations. This is usually what is done, I would say, commonly in data simulation, because you have an unsteady problem and you, for example, try to predict the initial condition to best match measurements. But you will see that in aerodynamics, there is another thing which can be very, very useful and which is of prime importance, is mean flow quantities. So of course, this is a post-processing of the unsteady. So if you manage to do the unsteady reconstruction, you can also have the mean flow reconstruction. But you can also say that if I manage just to recover the mean flow quantities, maybe it's cheaper, okay? And maybe it will be less expensive to do that. And we will see that actually in aerodynamics, mean flow quantities is something that is super important for industry. And for example, these are wind tunnels at Onera, quite industrial wind tunnels at Onera. And when there is a product development like a new airplane or something like this, 99.99% of the measurements are all time average. So you have the time average of CL, you have the time average of pressure, you have nearly time average everywhere. So this is one of the motivation I have here for making a specific data simulation procedure, which just deals with mean flow quantities. So that's the outline of my talk. So I will have four parts dealing with either mean flow quantities, these are the two first and the last, or unsteady quantities. And the means, how I will do that, is basically different, you see. Reminder of what is the Reynolds decomposition. I will go quickly because everybody knows this. So you have the velocity field that you decompose into a mean, a time average, and the fluctuation. And if you plug that into the Navier-Stokes equation and take the mean, you end up with that equation where you have the U-bar, which is the mean solution, which is here. And this mean solution is, of course, dependent on the fluctuation which are here. So depending on a good modeling of this U prime, you will have a good or bad result in terms of mean, what we want actually. We want to predict the U bar. So we need the U prime. So basically, if your U prime is zero and you solve this equation, you have what is called the base flow. And you have here, in the case of a cylinder, a very large bubble. But if you take into account the fluctuation, which is U, the U prime, and you have the Reynolds stresses, you get here on the right bubble. And so we are interested in this. So basically we need to model this. So here there are different ways now to do that. So the first way to do that is directly tuning the F-bar. You see here we have this force, and basically what we can do is directly tune this F, which is here. So here we just have Navier-Stokes equation with a new lamina, molecular viscosity, and we try to find F. And we try to find F, of course, such that the mean flow solution bar is as close as possible to external data measurements, so in terms of measurements. And what my point is that this strategy is well suited at moderately high Reynolds numbers, but it will fail at very high Reynolds numbers, which are, for example, applications in aeronautics. And here I will just give an example, which I did with Sean Simon when he was in Caltech. So this is an experiment where you see an aeronaut here. The red parts here, these are PIB measurements. So these are windows for PIB measurements. And here on the lower right, you have a close-up of this experiment. And here, in terms of PIB, only 1 out of 5 are represented. So this is the experimental world, which is on the right. And if you look at the CFD world, so we have implemented the equation which is on the top, and we solve it with a Newton equation, and then we try to minimize with an optimization procedure. And the CFD, you see, there is much finer. So you can try to reconstruct the flow field with a much better accuracy. So the results of this are just represented here. So on the top left, you have the PIV, the PIV measurements here with 1 out of 3. Here on the right, we have the initial condition that we give to the optimization algorithm. So here you can see that the Reynolds number here is 2015, 500, which is different from the actual one. So that's because this Reynolds number is already sufficiently high. So we had to initialize at quite lower Reynolds number, and then we went up to the true Reynolds number, which was there. So it was a little tricky, but Sean made a wonderful there. And And so finally, after optimization, we obtain this assimilated field where we try to match the PIV on few points here, and this is the assimilated field. And so you can see also that the assimilated field is also there on the lower side, while it was absent here because the laser sheet did not illuminate on the lower side of the model. So what I wanted to say is that this strategy is possible for moderately high Reynolds numbers, and but it is difficult. And if you want to go even at higher Reynolds number, you will have problems for initialization. You will have problems of what is to find the minima and even find initial conditions. And because of that, we went to next strategies where we consider turbulence model. So you can see that here we don't have any more the Reynolds stress, but we have a model. So I will come back to this just afterwards. Or we can have also another strategy that we investigated. Both of these strategies were investigated in the PhD of Lucas Franceschini. And here we can also try to take for U prime resolving modes. And I will come back to this later in the talk. So here we have two new strategies, one which is more turbulence modeling with a turbulence model, and one which is more based on resolving modes. So now I come to the second part here. So reconstruction of mean flow quantities with turbulence models. And this is a work that I did with Lucas, so a PhD student, and Olivier Marquet. So here I come back to the Rance equation. Here you have the Reynolds stresses. And now I introduce my model. You see here, this is a Boussinesq approximation, which we will see is a little constraining. But a Boussinesq approximation is usually known to perform well in shear layers, in boundary layers, everything that is just quite smooth and where is just diffusion. And the Spallard-Almaraz model, we picked one model, which is the Spallard-Almaraz. I just represented like this, where you have convection, diffusion, and you have here a source term where there is production and destruction of eddy viscosity. And we will see that this Rance model usually performs approximately well. Of course, the Rance equations are not perfect, but it gives a first order approximation of what the flow field should be. But I would like to stress the fact that RANTS models have deficiencies. They are basically not good for a lot, for even quite simple flows. For example, this is a very simple case where you just have a bump here, a small bump. The flow is actually attached. So this is the red curve here. Here we represent skin friction as a function of the X coordinate. And you can see that the flow field is attached everywhere because the skin friction is positive everywhere. And depending on the turbulence model that you use, so basically you can use a two equation model like K omega, you can see that this guy is exhibits a separation, so it's bad. But you can even go to very good turbulence models like RSM, which are Reynolds stress models. Even in this case, there are deficiencies. It's better than the two equation model because the RSM doesn't separate. You see, it's closer to the red curve and doesn't separate, but it's still quite far away in terms of skin friction with respect to the truth. So that my point was to say that RANTS turbulence models are good for order one, but not very good. And for this, I think they are a good candidate to make data simulation because you can tune this turbulence model. So this is basically my model that I showed you before. And here I have introduced actually two tuning terms. You see FU and FNT were zero just before. And here we introduce two ways of correcting this Business the model. So there is one term, FNT, which will correct the production term and the destruction term. This is kind of analog of what Duresemi and Singh does when he tries to optimize his beta here. But here we felt it was more easy to introduce a source term which is space dependent and that we will tune to match measurements. So this is one possibility. But another possibility is also to correct directly on the momentum equations level. So you introduce here an FU, and this has an enormous advantage because you can go out of the constraint of the Business term, because Business, as all turbulence modeling people say, is extremely constraining and is not valid in outside of very simple flows. So we will see actually two ways of correcting, either FU or FNT, and we'll try to see what are the performances of these two ways of correcting turbulence models to match measurements. So the technique, our technique in terms of minimizing cost functional, we have here the cost functional that I introduced here. So here it is the discrepancy between the measurement of the model, which is here, and the true measurements, which are linked to the experiments. So this is my cost functional. Here I didn't consider any state covariance, but we'll see later that we can introduce one. So now this is the cost functional. And here we introduce the governing equations. These are exactly the Spallar-Almaros model with my two correcting terms, FU and FNT. And my control parameters are these two. And then we introduce a Lagrangian to try to compute the two gradients. So here we have the cost functional, and here we have the gradient with respect to FU and FNT. And this will enable us to minimize this cost function in a very efficient way using gradient and a decent algorithm, which is here LBFGS. And so it's quite easy to do that. We just combine all these different things, the gradients and LBFGS, and then we manage to diminish and to optimize FU and FNT. So here I introduce a test case. So this is the test case where we tried this. So it's a backward facing step, something like this, a round backward facing step. The Reynolds number is something like 28,000. And the truth here is a DNS simulation that was performed by Julien Dandois. So Julien Dandois performed the DNS simulation, and he gave us a time-averaged solution, which is here. And you can see that the flow field separates in the backward-facing set. So this is separation. And on the Lua part of this here. You have on the left wall friction, and on the right wall pressure as a function of the x coordinate. And you have the truth, which is the black solid line, and you have the Rahn-Spalar Almaraz. And what you can see that is that the Rahn-Spalar Almaraz is very bad in this configuration. You can see this is the truth, and this is the Rahn-Spalar Almaraz. So you can see that the bubble is much bigger with the Rahn-Spalar Almaraz model. So what we try to do is to tune FU and FNU T separately to try to match measurements. So in terms of measurements, we will consider two cases. We will first consider a case on the top where we have the whole velocity field. That means that at every point, we assume that we have a measurement. So it's a little like PIV measurement, which is very dense. So this will be the first step. And then we have a second case where we, of course, go towards sparsity of measurements. And here we will use measurements which are along the green dots. So this mimics measurements in a wind tunnel where you have a hot wire that you move along a line. So first I will start with this one and I will see what my optimization yields. So this is the optimization history. Here you have the iteration in terms of LBFGS optimization algorithm. And here you have the cost functional that is minimized. And depending if you optimize the FNUT or the FU term, you manage to match the measurements and the full flow field in a different way. So first of all, as you can see, if you tune the Business correction, you manage to match the measurements in very closely. You see with an error which is like 10 to the minus 4. While if you have the turbulence model correction, this is the FNUT in the Spalar Almaraz model, you manage to go close to the measurements, but in a very coarse way. And we will see that this is linked to the fact that here we are still in the Businesk approximation, which constrains the reconstruction very strongly, while with the Businesk correction, there is much more freedom for FU to try to fit the actual measurements. So these are the overall results in terms of reconstruction. If we now look a little better the fields. So here, this is the reference mean flow. And this is the reference Spalar Almaraz flow. These are the pictures that I showed you just before. And now, after optimization, we will see that with the turbulence model correction, so this is the guy which is still in the Businesk constraint, we try to correct the production and dissipation, the destruction term of the new T field. We manage to be much closer to the bubble, which is here, and also much closer in terms of wall friction and wall pressure. But we are not exactly reconstructing the reference, which is here. We will see that now, that was with the FNUT. If we now go to the Businesk correction, you can see that the bubble is now exactly the same as in the DNS. And we can see that the Businesk correction is actually much more performant to reconstruct the turbulence mean. So now we go into the case of sparse measurement before we were in the case of dense measurement. And we will see how these two modeling techniques, how these two correction terms perform. So here, this is the case of the Businesk correction. So before, Businesk correction was much better than turbulence correction. We managed to do a better job. But here you can see that if we just use sparse measurements, which are the green points, we have something that looks like the reference flow, but it is extremely, there are wiggles everywhere. So basically, this can be interpreted by the fact that the Businesk correction can tune things very, very finely, but finally, he has too few informations to be tuned everywhere. So basically, we have many inputs. This is FU, many inputs. We have a few outputs. These are the measurements along the points. And we have a very flexible model. And this makes it bad. And we will see, we will go a little further on this afterwards. Basically, we have an inverse problem, which is completely underdetermined, but it is too flexible. And this one doesn't work in this case. If we now go to the turbulence model correction, which is much more constrained in the full case, measurement case that we had before, it was much weaker. But here, as you can see, it is nearly perfect. And here, this can be interpreted in this sense. There are still many inputs because we optimize an F nu t over the whole spatial field. So there are still many inputs in terms of control parameters. There are no few outputs. Okay, this is like before because there are only green points, few green points, but we have a quite rigid model. So this is what is here. And as the model is rigid, he doesn't enable the reconstruction to introduce wiggles. And this makes it okay here. So here we are in the case where the turbulence model correction is better than the Boussinesq approximation in the case of sparse measurement, while this was the other way around before. So can we still cure the Boussinesq correction? I would say yes. The Boussinesq correction, basically what we try to introduce here with the magenta term is try to introduce state covariance information globally. And basically what we tell the algorithm is to penalize the gradients. So we know basically that the Reynolds stress terms are not very, there are no wiggles in the physics, okay, in the actual flow fields. So we can, on a physical basis, penalize this this term. And then we manage to cure this Boussinesq, this Boussinesq correction term. So these are basically overall results. Now I just have a small slide to try to understand a little better what is the flexibility and rigidity of these two models. So here there is the FU correction term, and here is F nu t correction term. And basically what we introduce to understand this is the resolvent at zero frequency with respect to the forcing, which is delta F. So delta F is delta FU or is F nu t, okay? And LU bar minus one is the linearized equations around the model and which links a variation in delta F and delta U bar. And then what we try to do is to maximize the delta F to generate the biggest delta U, okay? And then if we look at this resolvent at zero frequency, we have singular values, which are here, which are the gamma I square over gamma zero square at zero frequency. And here, these are the singular values, and these are, the index of the singular value, and these are the singular values. And as you can see, is that the F nu t model, the singular values drop very, very quickly, while the FU singular values, they stay above for a lot of eyes. So in terms of interpretation, this shows that with FU, the states that you can reach, you see the delta U bar that you can reach, the subspace is much more high dimensional. While in the case of F nu t, the space that you can reach in terms of delta U bar is much weaker, so that we can definitely say that F nu t is strongly constrained in terms of delta U bar that you can reach, because you can basically just reach a subspace of dimension, let's say 2, 3, or 4. While with FU, you can reach a large dimension space. And this explains a little better what is behind flexibility and rigidity of these two models. So now I go to the reconstruction of unsteady quantities. So I will not speak anymore here in this part of mean flow quantities. I will speak here of unsteady quantities with resolvent modes. And this is a first a work. So just in terms, so first I will look how resolvent modes align with which unsteady data, which is here SPOD. And then I will show, once they are aligned, how we can use this information to make unsteady flow reconstruction. And this first part is a work that I did with George, who is here, and also when I was in Caltech 2 years ago. So so this here, so I will here introduce a flow field, which is not of mine. So this is a simulation that has been done by Guillaume Braise. So I was not involved in all these computations, but these computations are extremely nice. This is a turbulent jet, unsteady, which is extremely unsteady. And the question is, what are the unsteady...
Oh, turn it.
Sorry? Yes? Is it okay?
Yes, I think it's okay. Yes, you can continue.
Okay. So here there are unsteady features. The question is, how can we characterize unsteady features in this turbulent jet? So you see here snapshots, and we will first introduce for people who don't know this, what is called SPOD, spectral pod. So spectral pod is like pod, but in the frequency domain. So I just briefly remind this here. So spectral pod modes are basically, you consider the cross-correlation matrix, which is here. So you have the U flow field, you have U star, which is the transconjugate, and you look at the 2.2 time correlation matrix, which is the guy which is here, and the brackets here with T means a time average. And then we take the Fourier transform of the C of tau, which is well defined, and then this is the cross spectral density tensor that we can approximate with an ensemble average of Fourier transform. You see the U hats are basic Fourier transform of when you have data, you just pick small portions of data, and then you make the ensemble average. And once you have this C hat, you can decompose this C hat with an SVD, and then you will make appear the U hats, which are called the SPOD modes. And there are also another very interesting features, the lambda one squares, which are the singular values, will give you the rank of the dynamics. Basically, if you have lambda one very big with respect to lambda two, then you have a fluctuation field at that frequency, at a given frequency, which is dominated by just one mode, okay? And this will be a very nice feature that we will look in the forthcoming slides. So what are the results? Again, I did nothing in these results. I just picked the results from Ethan, so on. So these are the lambda squares where you have the Strouhal number. This is the frequency. And here at each frequency, you have a series of eigenvalues, which are these singular values that you have here. Okay. And what you can see is that at each frequency here, if you represent the singular mode, you have different physical mechanisms. So for example, at very low frequency here, you have the structure, which is here, which is very large scale. If you increase the frequency here, you can see that the scales become shorter. This is normal, this is regular, this is classical. And if you go here even to 0.6 and 1, you can see that the structures become smaller and smaller. And all these modes are basically linked to Kelvin-Helmholtz driven instabilities. And what you can also see in terms of feature is that the first singular value here is much bigger than the second for some frequencies, but not for all frequencies. For example, here, there are very close, while here, the dynamics is low rank. So that means that there is here just one mode dominating the whole fluctuation field. So now, these are the data. And now, we will try to do data simulation with this unsteady data in the same way as what we did before. So we introduce a model. So the model here will be the Navier-Stokes equations, still the Reynolds decomposition, but instead of looking at the equation which was linked to the mean flow U bar, we go a little further and look at the equation that is linked with the fluctuation. So here we have, so this is nearly an exact equation, except this mutate. This is nearly an exact equation where you have on the left a linear operator here around the mean flow, which is U bar. Okay, and which is at either molecular viscosity, or we can add something, nu t, because we'll see afterwards that we'll add a nu t here. And here on the right-hand side, there is a forcing term, a driving term, that is considered as unknown, which is an F prime here, okay? And this equation, which is complicated, you can rewrite it in compact form here, okay? U prime is the fluctuation. This is the linear operator with nu t and u bar, and here there is the unsteady fluctuation. And here you can go again in the Fourier space, and finally rewrite this equation. And here you have the link between input f hat and output u hat. And here in between there is the resolvent operator, which is dependent on the frequency. And once you have this model, okay, this matrix R u bar, or this operator, you can make a singular value decomposition of this operator. So we have this operator, which is a basically matrix here, and you decompose it into optimal responses, u tilde, singular values again, and optimal forcings, which are the f tilde hat. And these u tildes and f tildes, these are orthogonal bases and which characterize the dynamics linked to this operator. And these are the optimal gains. And so now we will see how these modes, the u tildes which are here, can be linked to the S-pod mode. So this is done here. So this is quite classical and has been done in a series of articles which are here. For this, we take again the spectral covariance matrix. This is what we did before. But here in u hat, we introduce the decomposition of the resolvent. And finally, we arrive at this equality, which is here, where u hat are the S-pod modes and u tilde are the resolvent modes. Okay, and in between, there is the covariance of the noise, which is the f hat, the covariance of the forcing. And basically, what we would like to have is that the u hats are equal to the u tildes. Okay, u hat is equal to the u tildes. Of course, this is not granted. This is not given in any case. There are two specific, very specific conditions where you can easily show that u hat is equal to u tilde. So S-pod mode is equal to the resolvent mode. This is when the resolvent is rank one. That means that sigma one is very large with respect to sigma two. Okay, then you can show that the first S-pod mode is equal to the first resolvent mode. And then there is another case when the noise. You see, you recognize the scalar product, and we will try to maximize this alignment. And we penalize also nu t so that we have just the smallest amount of nu t to achieve this. So again, we make something classical. We compute the gradient of the cost functional with respect to nu t. And then here we use a steepest ascent algorithm with a line search. So it's not LBFGS, it's more simple. But it also works in this case. And so the results are here. So the two first lines are the same lines that I showed you before, S-pod on the top, the resolvent modes, which are just with the regular viscosity, which is baseline, okay? And here you have the optimized one, okay? So when we optimize the nu t or the mu t. And now you can see that the first and third pictures always are very close. This is what you can see everywhere. And the scalar products are quite high everywhere. You see 0.80, 0.77, 0.96, 0.90. So we manage, by tuning nu t, we manage to align all the scalar products and align all the S-pod and resolvent modes. And just to show you, these are the optimal mu t's that are linked to these two optimizations. So this works very well. And finally here, we just looked at the dominant S-pod mode. We can also look at the subdominant mode. This is the second one. So initially, if you just optimize alignment of the first S-pod mode with the first resolvent mode, you can show that the optimal mu t is not that good. It is better than the baseline, but not that good. It's 0.38. But what you can also do is optimize two modes, the first and the second together. And in this case, you have alignment of the first and the second mode very in a very nice way. So in terms of overall conclusions, this is what is on the right here. This is the baseline, these are the S-pole modes, these are the resolving modes, and this is the scalar product. And what we would like to have is something where it is black everywhere on the diagonal. The baseline, it's not good at all. If we just optimize the first mode, we have just alignment here. But if we optimize the two first alignments, you can see that we manage more and more to align all S-pod modes with resolvent modes. And this is a very nice feature that we will know, and we will now see how we can use this nice feature. So here, this is my third part, which has been done with Samir Benedin and Benjamin Leclerc at UNERA. So this is an experiment where we have PIV measurements. So this is a jet. So we are still in a jet, but at very low Reynolds number, 3,300. And so here we know that there is a good alignment between resolvent mode and S-pod modes. Here it is, it works well from the beginning, just with molecular viscosity. And what we have here is a TRPIV measurements where there are unsteady fluctuations. And what we'll try to reconstruct is these unsteady fluctuations, okay? So basically, we will try to reconstruct this knowing just two things. First, the mean flow, which is here. So this is just the mean of this. And just at some point, we will say that we know the unsteady fluctuations, which are here. Okay. So just by knowing this, okay, we can compute the resolvent modes. And then knowing this information on the bottom, we can tune the modes at different frequencies to try to reconstruct the flow field everywhere. So just knowing these two things, okay, we managed to obtain these results. So this is the ground truth, okay? And this is the reconstruction of the longitudinal velocity. This is the radial velocity. And you can see that these two pictures, these two movies are very close. So basically just from the knowledge of the mean flow and one point of unsteady fluctuations, we managed to completely reconstruct the flow field. So here we, with resolvents, we managed to have a good representation of the dynamics. So here I just come back very quickly to the mean flow, reconstruction of mean flow quantities with resolvent modes. You will see that the idea is very simple. Basically, we come back to our equations that we had at the beginning, the mean flow equations, and here we have the Reynolds stresses. So now the idea is to say that for u prime here, we just take the resolvent modes because we assume that the fluctuations, which are u hats, okay, they are given in a very close way by the resolvent modes which are there. So if you plug this inside here, you basically manage to have a Reynolds stress tensor where you have structures that are given by the resolvent modes, but you have parameters that you need to tune, which are just n scalars. So here we have n real contour parameters, which are just the amplitudes of the resolvent modes. And then what we basically need to do is to solve a discoupled system where we have the mean flow equation, which is there. We have the resolvent modes, and we have to tune this guy, which is here, okay? And doing this, we should manage to recover the U-bar, okay? So if we do that, so this we have done that with the cylinder flow, which is very simple, Reynolds 100, because it was very simple. There are the frequency spectrum is very simple because we just have peaks, discrete peaks. So the fluctuation approximation, we just take one mode here. So we just have one real control parameter to tune. And finally, we can take very rough information from the experiment or from the experiment. Here, for example, we can take the length of the bubble, and then we look at we vary the control parameter, which is the modulus of A, and then we look when the length of the bubble matches the experimental one, which is 2.43. Okay. And what we can see here is that the modulus of A is something like 2.3. You can do the same thing by taking other information, for example, the mean drag. And here you find that A is also something like 2.22. You can also take other information. You can take lots of information. You just need to have one information because you have one control parameter and fit the two, and then you have a reconstruction of the flow field. And for example, this is my final result, where we have the DNS, the Fourier mode at the peak. So this is the unsteady fluctuations and the Reynolds stress and everything. And this is the reconstructed flow field. And you can see that it works quite well. You see the two are very close. And this is a very nice reconstruction. Of course, in a very easy case, because it's Reynolds number 100, but we also looked at more complicated case. So basically, this is my slide of conclusions. Just to say that there is a lot to do, still a lot to do. At Onera, we would like to go to very complicated applications because we have wind tunnels, very big wind tunnels. And basically, we would like to do the assimilation process on a very complicated case, which is here. It's a case which comes from the high lift configuration workshop. And in terms of methodology, there is also a lot to do. Better take into account state covariance, go to more complex turbulence model, EARSM, DRSM, because we saw that boostiness is extremely constraining. Also combine turbulence models and resolvent modes, okay, because turbulence model can represent small scales, while resolvent modes can represent the large scales. Modeling of unsteady dynamics that once you have tuned new T for each frequency, you can try to make subgrid scale modeling and go a little in the line of what Duresemi does for mean flow reconstruction. We can do models for ADS for unsteady fluctuations. So basically, that's it. Thank you.